Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Neurodiversity, it's a term that's used to describe differences in the way people's brains work. There is a wide range of ways that people perceive and respond to the world. And today we focus on one of those different ways, a spectrum, I should say, autism. Autism or autism spectrum disorder, it's also known by the acronym ASD, refers to a broad range of conditions characterized by challenges with social skills, repetitive behaviors, speech, and nonverbal communication. Now, according to the Centers for Disease Control, autism affects an estimated 1 in 36 children and 1 in 45 adults in our country today. This hour, we want to discuss workplace accommodations for those with autism. Later in the program, we'll hear from specialists in that field. And we'd like to hear from you this hour, especially if you or a loved one have autism. 1-866-780-9100. Tell us about your experience with autism, the specific challenges you've faced in the workplace. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Yesterday, I had the chance to talk with an Iowan with autism. Brad Byron is an attorney with the state of Iowa. Brad, welcome to the program, and thank you for joining us to share about your experiences.
Nice to meet you, Ben. Yes, absolutely.
Now, we know that there is not one type of autism, but many types, and autism looks different for everyone. So let's explore your autism, if we could, a little bit. When did you first know you had autism?
So I have a weird experience in how I was diagnosed. In February of 2020, I was still 35. I was in a car accident and suffered a traumatic brain injury. After some time at OnWith Life, I got transferred to a concussion facility here in Des Moines. And the psychologist appointed to me, very nice person, asked me how my traumatic brain injury affected my autism. I asked her, huh? And she said, how did your brain injury affect your autism? And I asked her very meekly, I have autism? She kind of went through the file and realized no one ever told me. And so it was just kind of a surprise. But for me, in understanding and accepting myself, it's been a wonderful discovery of self-compassion and self-forgiveness for my earlier understanding of myself as being just purely awkward or not good at socializing. And so it took a lot of weight off my shoulders.
Yeah, I imagine it did, Brad. But just to be clear here, the diagnosis had been made before your car accident or in your recovery, but you had not been told of it?
During my recovery, yep.
During your recovery. Okay. So it was when you were 35 or 36. And as you say, this was a complete surprise to you. I understand your sister is a psychologist. She was also surprised.
My sister is a clinical forensic psychologist, and she specifically diagnoses, looks at children. And so she was used to symptoms of children and looking at their symptoms. As I was growing up in New York City, my group of friends, we were kind of sequestered into an accelerated classroom program. So none of us ever really stuck out as being neurodivergent or atypical because we were all kind of in that same pool. And so there was no indicator growing up. There was nothing that really stood out to about any one of us necessarily. So it was easy to fly under the radar, so to speak. We develop fixations oftentimes. And so for me, my focus was on everything related to ecology, specifically plants. My very first job, I was a zookeeper growing up. And that focus was based upon a very, very good memory, as well as the ability to picture things in three dimensions and manipulate them in my head in order to be able to design better projects when I was a landscape architect. But, you know, there's balance to it. There's that constant state of anxiety that one goes through about, did I say the right thing? Do I understand what's going on? Pronouns are very confusing, especially when you're in a group of several people. So if they're talking about a certain it or certain them, we can get lost very easily. And so for the most part, even though you meet one autistic person, you've only met one, there are some similar characteristics of preferences for proper nouns, more direct communication, not forcing us to guess emotions or tone, giving us some heads up. So there is a very big balance to it. It's not just gifts for some people. For others, it could be more detrimental. But that's why it's a spectrum. The DSM-4 did have diagnoses that were well over 50 of them that are now in the DSM-5 wrapped up into one diagnosis. So it's a conflicting understanding as to what exactly it is we're looking at.
Brad, I understand after you were diagnosed at the age of 35 or so, this had a ripple effect. Others around you were also diagnosed.
So there was this interesting, I don't believe I'm the cause, more of the opening the book or opening people's minds necessarily within my group of colleagues and friends. People were kind of taken aback and shocked. Many of my friends were having children right around, let's say, the pandemic or pre-pandemic, and their children were being diagnosed. And then they kind of thought, hey, why don't we get diagnosed? And a lot of them turned out to also be on the spectrum. I have one that just turned 41 years old. He was diagnosed, and it was based on his children first getting diagnosed, and that led him to wanting to have more questions answered. So
you were a catalyst for good here for learning about diagnoses.
I'm hoping amongst my friends, or at least open up their minds to the idea that anyone could be a part of this community.
Okay, let's have you take us, Brad, into your current workplace, because you work as an attorney with the state of Iowa. Let's say I am one of the people you work with, or perhaps I'm someone you come into contact with for the very first time in the course of your work as an attorney with the state of Iowa. What do you want me to know, or what do you make clear to accommodate your autism so that we can work efficiently and have some of that awkwardness not surface?
Sure. It has to do with good communication ahead of time and planning. So for me personally, I didn't make a big announcement via like the listserv for the office. I simply pinned to my cubicle a sign that says, I'm an autistic person eager to help you. In order to help you better, please consider avoiding the use of pronouns, and if need be, consider using a diagram or drawing some sort of sketch to help communicate. So that's just passive signage that over time people have gotten used to, and people have adapted and communication has improved. When it comes to meetings, I'd like to understand if there's a goal, this is a problem solving or an information gathering meeting, because for me, I imagine my mind to work very similar to like a transmission. I need to know what gear to be in order to be most effective. So just a couple questions ahead of time. In my situation, I did used to have to wear a lot of compression garments. That symptom has decreased a great deal. And I do have a service dog I bring to work.
So give me a situation where Oliver, your service dog, comes in real handy. What situation does he help most in?
So for me, the dog helps to reduce my anxiety. I take my anxiety medication less than I usually would. I'm able to concentrate more. Just makes for a more comforting environment. So for many people on the spectrum, our perception and senses are attuned a little bit too high. So our cognitive load, that's, if you think about that as RAM versus hard drive in a computer, is a little bit smaller or the same size, but the amount of information we're getting in is much higher. So for me, I have to wear very dark glasses that are nearly black to see better, as well as my brain can think longer. It doesn't fall asleep in a certain way. There's no sundowning early. In addition, I have to wear noise-canceling headphones because of the ambient noise in the office. And all those things are accommodations that the office administration doesn't really care about, because it doesn't affect the greater workplace or my work product.
You work for the state of Iowa, and I'm sure you're aware of contact with other people with autism who work in other places that are perhaps less accommodating. I would think that working for the state would be very accommodating. There's a range of understanding and accommodations at different workplaces, right?
Yes. So even within state government, I am very lucky where I work, that the people and administration are supportive and are helpful and do not create any sort of artificial impediments for me. There are workplaces, though, where they see accommodations as I'm giving this employee special treatment versus others. And some employees do view that sometimes, because for me, I don't take a full lunch. I eat at my desk and take multiple small breaks. So my coworkers will see me walking out of the building more frequently and walking back in more frequently. So unless people understand what's going on, there might be a sense of inequity. But proper communication by administration supervisors does help prevent that. Some workplaces are not as knowledgeable, let's say, when it comes to people who are neurodivergent. The benefits of getting different perspectives, different talents. There are many benefits, and they do outweigh any costs of accommodations, as typically accommodations or the cost of them are the burden is on the individual. And we have to pay for our own things. So our glasses, our noise-canceling headphones.
After a short break, we'll be back with more of my conversation with Brad Byron, who was diagnosed with autism in his mid-30s. He now works as an attorney with the state of Iowa. This hour, we're discussing workplace accommodations for those with autism. And we'd like to hear from you, especially if you or a loved one have autism. You can join our conversation 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Tell us about your experience with autism and work. We'll be back after a short break.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com. Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
And we're back with more of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, making the workplace work for those with autism. Autism, or autism spectrum disorder, refers to a broad range of conditions characterized by challenges with social skills, repetitive behaviors, speech, and nonverbal communication. According to the CDC, autism affects an estimated 1 in 36 children and 1 in 45 adults in the U.S. today. Brad Byron works as an attorney with the state of Iowa. He has autism. And at this point in our conversation, recorded yesterday, I asked him about the state laws and policies in place for employees with autism and whether he thought those policies could be improved.
I think when it comes to improving employment opportunities, it's not necessarily the employers who have to be told to change. I believe it's a more of a institutional-wide phenomenon that needs to change, or paradigm shift in how we look at not only educating all of the children that we have in our community, but also educating the people that will become our leaders and entrepreneurs and our administrators and our supervisors, helping them understand what the needs are and where we can fit, so they see that our deficits are actually opportunities and assets. So starting at a younger age, intervening, and then continuing on that message of not only acceptance, but this is good for your company. Whole countries have found benefits in this. If we look at like Eindhoven, Netherlands, they have their own Silicon Valley they have a very high concentration of neurodivergent people, and they attract people. In Israel, where my family comes from, there's mandatory compulsory enlistment. For a long time, autistic people were exempt, but in order to get benefits, you need to be part of the army. So they created Unit 9900, and it's filled only with people with autism. And they work for the Air Force, and their ability to recognize differences between images in radar is unsurpassed by any other group of people.
To finish up here, Brad, when we talk specifically about the workplace, what are the most common misunderstandings people have in the workplace when they learn you have autism? What hints can you give there?
I had one person laugh because they thought I was making a joke. Like, they just responded saying, "Oh, you don't seem like you have it." So oftentimes people have this image of either Rain Man or Awakening, these cultural milestones of people who are neurodivergent that don't allow people like me to fit into any of those molds. And many of us who are diagnosed as adults don't easily fit into those silos. So there is some explanation. Luckily, Iowans, I don't feel they just don't have the exposure. So they don't ignore the reality of my existence. They actually ask a lot of questions. And I rather them ask questions that come at me with pitchforks and torches. So a conversation here or there, a comment or a question. Otherwise, there aren't very personal questions, really.
Well, thank you for this conversation and for answering all my questions. We've learned quite a bit about how you are accommodated at the workplace and contribute as an attorney with the state of Iowa. Brad, you've been an open book here, and we've learned so much. Thank you for this conversation.
Thank you for the work that you do, and I appreciate all your time.
That conversation with Brad Byron, recorded yesterday, back live with River to River from IPR News. Ben Kiefer here. Are companies missing out when they overlook neurodivergent people? That question comes to mind after that conversation with Brad. We're talking about people who have brains that work differently this hour, people on the autism spectrum. And we know now that if we didn't before, there's not one type of autism, but many. It looks different for different people. So we're talking about making the workplace work for those with autism. We'd love to hear from you this hour. Tell us about your experience with autism and the specific challenges you have faced in the workplace. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, if you prefer, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us for the rest of the hour, James Williams is with us. He's an administrator for Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services. That's a division of Iowa Workforce Development. He'll tell us about that work in just a moment. James also has autism. Welcome to our program, James.
Awesome. Thank you, Ben. Glad to be here.
Judy Worth is with us as well. Judy is an employment training specialist with the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She joins me in the Iowa City studio. Nice to see you, Judy.
Good to see you, Ben. And hi, Dr. Williams.
Hi, Judy.
We'll talk about Judy's work helping those with disabilities in their workplace in just a moment. I want to start off with you, James. We heard one story. We're learning about the journeys and the experiences of people with autism are very different. Tell us quickly about your diagnosis with autism. Brad, not diagnosed until his mid-30s. You were in your teens, right?
I was. So I was diagnosed when I was 12 years old. And obviously a lot has changed in that time. When I was diagnosed, honestly, the understanding of autism as a spectrum, particularly the higher end of the spectrum, where Brad and myself really lie, really wasn't understood. In fact, I want to echo what he said. a lot of the understanding was around Rain Man and more, I would say, more significant autism. And we certainly have some commonalities in some of our traits and things, but really presents very differently. And similar to him, many times people are not aware that I'm on the spectrum. In fact, they usually are never aware unless I choose to tell them. And it's generally not something that comes up in conversation unless, you know, you're unless you do the kind of work that I do.
Yeah.
So I was diagnosed at that time. And honestly, it all rooted from, in the shortest way to explain it, I had a teacher in school that just spoke to my mom and said, "Hey, you know, I've worked with individuals on the spectrum before. Your son is not diagnosed, but I see some traits. You may want to have him talk to a professional." And that's where it started. I met with a psychologist who did an assessment, a very common assessment we still use to this day for people, and came out, I believe, with a 96% certainty that I was on the spectrum, and mm-hmm. that's obviously pretty high. And from then, it was just kind of started this lifelong journey. It was when I was 12. I'm 37 now, so it's been a couple of decades, and been learning every day.
Yeah, James, help us understand your particular version of autism, where you are on the spectrum. Give us perhaps a sense of the biggest challenges for you, or how you describe your way of thinking to those without autism.
Sure. That's a tough one. It's tough to explain that, but I'll do the best I can. So for me, a lot of times I see a lot of things that other people don't see, or I hear a lot of other things that people don't hear. A lot of it has to do with patterns. I see patterns everywhere, all day, every day. It's honestly kind of overwhelming how many patterns I see sometimes. And so that's one area I really identify with him or from earlier, is I see that a lot too. Part of it, I think, for me is nuances. I'm somebody who is very direct. I'm very straightforward. I am naturally not very assertive. I've had to develop assertiveness as a skill for the workplace, because that is not naturally who I am at all. You can ask my wife. I'm not the pushy person. That's not my style. But I've had to learn how to be assertive. So I think, you know, for me, the social nuances are something that I've had to work a lot on. Another piece is giving myself grace when, in terms of social situations and sensory overload. So I'm somebody who, you know, for instance, I'm at a conference right now. I love going to conferences. I love meeting people in my field, but I have to go in and out of it. I can't just sit in a room all day and listen and listen and listen and socialize. I just don't have that ability. I have to step back, recharge, and then re-enter. And so I think, you know, that's a big part of it, especially when it comes to sensory overload related to sound and light. Really sensitive in those particular areas. So I'd say that's mostly how it affects me, is really some of those kind of nuanced, kind of hidden things. I think it's another reason why a lot of people don't know I'm on the spectrum, is they just don't see some of those typical behaviors that they think they're looking for. Even if I've had parents, for instance, of children on the spectrum say, you know, really? They have no idea. Yeah. And they have their children every day that they see. So.
James, you are an administrator for Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services, VR Services. That's a division of Iowa Workforce Development. And we want to talk to Judy about her work in just a moment, but I want to ask you about yours. I understand nearly 60% of people with autism in our country are employed after receiving vocational rehabilitation services. These are state-provided services that help autistic individuals explore possible careers. They find a job, secure some accommodations at the workplace if that's needed. We heard that in the case of Brad. Tell us more about the rehab program that you administer available to Iowans.
Absolutely. So I'm very excited. I just to give some context, I was a vocational rehabilitation customer in Texas where I grew up. And so I'm a customer who's been served by these services and touched by them. I'm now somebody who leads the agency for the state of Iowa. There's one of us in every state and territory in the United States. And what we do is, simply put, we help individuals with disabilities, autism included, obtain, maintain, and get training for employment. That is our sole focus. Now, the services we provide are varied. Everything from helping someone get a job, working on their resume, practicing for an interview. We connect individuals to employers that are specifically looking to hire individuals on the spectrum or individuals with disabilities. All of our services really revolve around that. We have 13 area offices across the state of Iowa. covering every county, all 99 counties in the state of Iowa. I have over 250 staff members in my division. Mm-hmm. The majority of those staff members are what we call vocational rehabilitation counselors, or VR counselors. They provide direct services to individuals with disabilities and really help facilitate those services. It's also really interesting. This is a fun fact I want to share about VR. It is a state and federally funded program, but what most people don't know is we're actually almost 70% federally funded and only 30% state funded. And even more impressively, for every dollar that the state legislature in Iowa puts into our program, we receive $3 from the federal government. And so it's a really incredible program in that we're able to leverage a small amount of resources into tremendous services. To give you an idea, in the last fiscal year, we served between 10 and 11,000 Iowans with disabilities across the state and help them find employment. And so I'm really proud of what we do and have an incredible team. And Judy is one of our partners. We actually work with Judy on some of our projects.
Yeah. James, I hope we can dig down. We'll, as time permits, we'll dig down more into some details about your work there. Fascinating work. And I'm imagining just so satisfying to make those workplace accommodations. Judy, before we go to break, I want to learn about your work because it's quite a bit of overlap between what you do and James does. You are partners, as he just pointed out, as an employment training specialist with University of Iowa Healthcare. Tell us about your work.
thank you. And yes, we are partners with James and all of his staff. I'm at the University Center for Excellence on Developmental Disabilities, which is part of the University of Iowa Healthcare. And there we provide, our mission is to help individuals with disabilities live, learn, and work in their communities. And my focus is on helping people work. And so I do an array of things, but as in terms of our partnership with vocational rehabilitation, we work with individuals who need more assistance than what James and Brad need, people who really need, their needs are more intense.
Give us an example.
Well, I would say that, for example, I worked with a man who had difficulty communicating, just even in an interview.
Social communication.
Absolutely. And then needed some accommodations and some extra time to learn how to do their job, as well as deal with all the environmental things. You know, as Brad had mentioned, that, you know, when you're overstimulated with the lights, the people, the interactions, exhaustion comes about more quickly. Mm. You know, I can only imagine how difficult it is to go to a staff meeting with 14 people and answer questions and participate when you're juggling multiple balls. And, you know, and as James said, you know, all the nuances and the patterns he's seeing while he's still trying to participate. The people who we typically provide support for, and when I say we, I'm talking about employment training specialists, job developers throughout the state of Iowa. A lot of them work for community rehabilitation programs like Goodwill, Easter Seals, Hope Havens, lots of small agencies around our state who have people like me who are working with area businesses and individuals to establish viable partnerships for both the business and the worker.
Mm-hmm. How do you establish the amount of need for help? Do you do an assessment? Is it more in James' court or both of your courts, Judy?
That's a great question. I'm inclined to say it usually comes from either the educational system, who has a young adult who they're saying, we know they're going to need, they're on the spectrum and we know they're going to need help. And the partnership with vocational rehabilitation, because vocational rehabilitation not only plays the expertise in assessment and design, they also provide support to those community rehabilitation programs and employment training specialists through contractual relationships. You know, as James said, last year they assisted over 11,000 people to get jobs. Well, divide that 250 of his staff. Those are incredibly high caseloads. And there are people who have more intense needs, and those people partner with our community rehabilitation programs.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, James, before we go to break in a minute or so, what are your services for employers? Do you have, some employers are well-versed in accommodating those with autism, others less so, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because both small and large employers we work with. And so we believe at IBRS in the dual customer model. And that is acknowledging that not only are we serving individuals with disabilities, those with autism, we're serving the employers that we want to give them those opportunities. And so part of what we do is provide technical assistance and support, help with accommodations. We try to create hiring pipelines between the individuals that we have that are looking for employment and those companies. So those are big pieces we do. I'm also excited to share, we're actually in the process of greatly expanding that capacity. For example, previous to in the last probably several years, we've really had, I would say one full-time person and two half-time staff members across the state trying to cover the whole state. As you can imagine, that's really difficult. We are now at a point where we are actually partnering with another division within Iowa Workforce Development called the Business Engagement Division, which has a much more robust team of about 13 business engagement consultants. And we're leveraging their support and their bandwidth across the agency to actually bring more and more services to individuals. So as exciting as it is now, a year or 2 years from now, I'd love to come back and tell you what we're going to do then, because we are going to have infinitely more resources than in terms of just connection points across the state. And so really excited to see that grow. But absolutely, one of the things we tell employers is if you have a desire to hire individuals with disabilities, talk to us, talk to our team. We
Okay.
will do anything we can to support you.
James Williams, Administrator for the Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services, VR Services. Judy Warth, Employment Training Specialist at UI Healthcare, talking about how to make the workplace work for those with autism. Join us, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org.
Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
Back with more River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about how to make the workplace work better for those with autism. And we're learning that there's not one type of autism, but many. It looks different for everyone. Joining us here is Judy Warth, Employment Training Specialist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She partners with James Williams, who is Administrator for Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services. That's a division of Iowa Workforce Development. James has also been sharing how he has autism. And if you'd like to join us with your questions or your experiences, perhaps you or a loved one have autism and would like to give us a picture of what the workforce, the work challenges, workplace challenges have been like for you. 1-866-780-9100 or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. James, before we go to caller and emails, this, you are a division of Iowa Workforce Development, and we all know following the news here on IPR that we have a workforce shortage. So it sounds like we have some untapped resources here that you are helping to
Absolutely.
Tap, not only in terms of personal fulfillment, having a job, but also helping our economy and our services.
Absolutely. It's so interesting at the point we are at with our workforce. And I think this is part of why we have such great support from both our Director of Iowa Workforce Development, Beth Townsend, and also Governor Reynolds, is recognizing that people with disabilities in Iowa are and one answer to a very, very big problem. We're not the only answer, certainly. But one big answer that I think for a long time has been really undervalued. We have a lot of individuals that we work with that that really want some of those jobs that are frankly tough to fill right now in the retail sector and hospitality, human services. There's great opportunities for people with disabilities to be involved. In fact, we've even taken initiatives at IVRS, and Judy's aware of some of these, where we're looking at how can we even get individuals with disabilities to be direct service professionals themselves for other people with disabilities? How can we utilize our own to support our own? And so I think that's a really great way to do that. But it is, it's a tremendous time. And to be honest, I told people, pre-pandemic, the average time I used to run an agency myself that provided these services on the other side, and we used to take maybe 6-9 months to find somebody a job. When I left that agency and actually came to Iowa for this position, we were averaging under 3 months, in some cases as fast as a month or a couple of weeks. And so it really has created a great opportunity for us to really take advantage of the timing and show the workforce and the world and the country how people with disabilities are here to step up as a part of our workforce.
Judy, talk about some of the biggest barriers you face to having people for the accommodation of those with physical disabilities in terms of autism. What do you typically face and how do you overcome those barriers?
As Brad said, one person with autism, you've met one. What we find is that one of the barriers is that individuals can't identify what kind of support they need. Mm. And so helping them identify and articulate what kind of support they need.
They aren't aware what could help them.
Right. And maybe, you know, because of this social communication deficit, it's like, I'm in my world. It's fine. I don't see why you people have problems.
Because I've been living with it all this time.
Right. And then simultaneously, as James said, we want to balance the needs of businesses. So simultaneously helping the businesses understand the unique nature of this individual. And then there's the accommodations that both of these guys have brought up, flexible schedules, clear communication, the ability to adjust lighting, to deal with sensory issues, mm-hmm. to create a culture where people understand that I function a little bit differently than you do, so that you can have mentors who will guide you and help navigate those social things. And as my coworkers will say about me often, you know, working on filters to make sure you don't say the wrong thing at the wrong time to the wrong person. And when it does happen, have tools to help navigate that stuff.
When you say that those with autism sometimes are not aware of the resources, the accommodations available here, it makes me think, Judy, that you must run into sort of light bulb situations where you're working with someone with autism and they didn't realize that what you are suggesting to them was possible, and that because we know this is connected with anxiety often, that you see a drop in anxiety, you mean I can do this way instead and work? Is that happen?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, Ben, I have a great example just from yesterday. I'm working with a young man because part of what I do is I work with youth here in the Iowa City Community School District to explore jobs and move into being ready for employment post-high school. And this young man has autism. He's rather loud in his interactions. He's brilliant, got tremendous computer skills, yet he's walking through our UI campuses, adjusting monitors, rebooting them so that they have current information on them, or troubleshooting when there's issues. But he's very loud. And just yesterday we were talking, and as I was watching him, I said, oh my goodness, I'm willing to bet there's an app or a tool that we can use on his computer that will flash a red light when he's being too loud so that he can go, quiet.
His voice is too loud.
Yes, because he doesn't have any awareness of that.
Did you suggest that? Did he welcome that?
We're talking about it. he has mixed emotions about anything like that coming in, but we are discussing it.
Okay, we have about 10 minutes left.
It's in negotiation.
Yes.
I want to get to our listeners are fired up to join in our conversation. I want to make sure that happens here in the last 10 minutes. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Talking about how to make the workplace work for those with autism. Courtney is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Courtney. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going?
Very well. Thank you for being on. What's on your mind?
Well, it's very exciting, and I can't thank y'all enough for having this conversation today, because I think the more that we normalize the information and awareness about autism, the more that it can function in the workplace at a higher rate. I'm a musician based here in Des Moines, and I've had jobs that were service industry, back in the house of the kitchen, and then also on stage. And so the versatility of those jobs and trying to accommodate the success of those occupations have been very vast. And it just really makes me want to add to the conversation a really wonderful term that helps really allay this conversation for my internal dialogue, at least, which was masking. And masking is this term used in the autism realm of people who are able to socially socially masked in a way where you would not assume that they had autism or any sort of neurodivergency. For the service industry side of my work occupation, I feel like 10 years of serving actually taught me how to mask and how to be able to communicate and work with people and accommodate people better. So I would almost say that serving was one of the most excellent forms of training with autism. And then the opposite end of being a musician and being on stage, it's interesting being in the audience and not being able to handle a lot of the lighting or the sound or the crowd. The crowd is really, really it's difficult to be around. And then the stage, it's like the way we have to build our music. We have to make it so that, you know, the drums aren't too loud or there's not so many sensory issues or we don't use lights or anything like, or, you know, smoke screens in our shows because we're trying to keep it to a level that's more accommodating, not only for myself as an autistic person, but for anybody else in the audience that may be as well. And just having a crew around you and people that understand those accommodations is so important.
Yeah, Courtney, as you found ways to accommodate masking or whatever, your anxiety has gone down, it sounds like. It sounds like you're very outgoing and assertive here.
Yes, I'm actually just talking to you. I'm shaking in the car a little bit.
no need to do that.
I'm very excited to talk to you, though. I'm so grateful for this conversation.
Oh, well, wonderful.
And over the years, I've noticed that, you know, we weren't having these conversations as much with women as we are with men. It's really been in the last 5 years that we've started seeing the major differences between men and women and how we mask or how autism presents itself in its many forms of that neurodivergency.
Mm. Courtney, thank you very much for chipping in, and we wish you all the best. Take care.
Hey, thank you so much.
James, perhaps you can pick up there with Courtney's, it sounds like a question there. What you have to add to this idea of masking, which many of us are not familiar with, and perhaps the gender differences, if you can speak to that.
Sure, I'd love to. They're both fascinating topics and things that I think about all the time. So first with masking, you know, it's interesting because I've had to learn in my life the situations in which I do need to mask and the situations in which I don't. And so, for example, in my role, I deal a lot with elected officials, with senior level officials. And so naturally, in those environments, professional environments, I tend to be a little bit more reserved about my diagnosis. I certainly don't hide it. And if they ask me, I'd say, sure. But I also would say I engage in a little bit more masking just because I'm not as sure how accepting the people in the room are of the diagnosis versus, you know, when I'm with my family or even I'm with, you know, my staff that I work with on a daily basis who are well aware of it, I'm certainly a little less likely to mask. So I think that's one of the ways I try to balance it. And it's not perfect. And I will tell you, masking is exhausting. There are days, that's why I gave the example earlier about conferences. There are days I get home and I am exhausted, not even just because of the work I did, but because of the socialness that I had to.
It sounds like with masking, you're a version of like a Hollywood actor or an actor on Broadway, and you're on. Exactly. You're on stage, and you've got to expend more energy to put up that profile, which is you can't relax into your normal self, right?
Exactly. And then I think, you know, very much so. And then to the gender question. Absolutely. You know, I have friends of mine that are female, that are on the spectrum. I have friends of mine that are, you know, transgender, LGBTQ, that are on the spectrum. It's such a different experience. I'm not going to pretend to say I understand it. I don't. But I will say this, you know, generally individuals on the spectrum of different genders do present differently. And particularly, you know, with my friends that I've had that are female, they tend to be a little more under the radar, I would say. They tend to be, from what I've seen, even harder to diagnose and even harder to quote unquote detect their autism. And so I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One of the examples I'd give real quick is, I feel like for a lot of women, there tends to be a natural, what I would consider more of a inclusive, more of a motherly type of style in the female community in terms of supporting their own. And I think one of the challenges we have conversely in the male community is we tend to have a little bit more of that masculine kind of, you know, be independent kind of a mindset. And I think sometimes that can be a challenge for us because, you know, for individuals like myself, we may not have as supportive as an environment where we can feel as comfortable versus individuals maybe that are female that have a little bit more comfort within their friend group or within their family group. So that's just a theory. There's no research behind
okay,
that.
Okay, Judy, get in here. We have just a couple minutes left in our program that could go on for hours easily with fascinating
yes.
discussion. But Judy, weigh in here on the gender differences
I'm
that you've experienced.
I'm going to coattail on the gender differences. It almost feels like two entirely different disabilities. And I
yes.
think there are a number of reasons for it. And James,
definitely.
I think you hit on a number of them. But one of them is, I think that women present slightly differently and are often diagnosed as either having a personality disorder or a high anxiety, that they switch to a mental health issue versus the disability of autism.
Hmm.
I think there's some...
A misdiagnosis,
I think
then.
There's a gender bias.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's
there.
Just my thinking. I have no science to back that up yet, but I'm sure there... It just that observationally, that's how it seemed to me. And I'm glad to hear you affirm that, James.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Judy, you've been working for what, decades with people with disabilities. So I mean, your expertise is, it says something about it. We have just a minute or two left here. I want to get Cheryl's email answer, question answered. And I'm sure others have this too. It gives us a chance to talk about resources. Cheryl asks, where should a person go to get checked for autistic tendencies? James, line up some resources for us so people can take that away from this conversation.
Absolutely. So there's lots of ways to go about that. You know, if an individual is looking for help with employment, certainly that's something we can help support. If they're looking for a diagnosis, we certainly have supported individuals to get that diagnosis, refer them to professionals, help with cost of that. So that's one thing to think about. We're not the only resource. There, you know, many times, as was the case with me, a psychologist, an evaluator, somebody that has a background in evaluating autism can work with an individual to receive that diagnosis. I always tell individuals to, you know, start with your first kind of point of contact. So for instance, if you're an adult and maybe you don't, you know, if you're somebody like me, you don't maybe go to the doctor a lot if you don't have a chronic health condition, but maybe you just go to your primary care doctor and say, hey, I've noticed these symptoms, you know, what are your thoughts? And a lot of times that can kind of get you to a next first step.
Yep.
I will tell you, it's challenging. We do not have enough evaluators to diagnose autism, particularly in Iowa. It's a really big challenge. So that it's the hard part is yes, there's resources. What I would encourage is, you know, they certainly can reach out to our agency and we'll provide some guidance. I know certainly Judy in the context that she have would do the same. But I think that's a good first step to start. Also really looking at resources online, two great organizations. One in particular I'd recommend is Autism Society of America. They have some great resources on their website just to explore the diagnosis further and understand it better. And then that can be a great kind of takeoff point to, hey, I really want to investigate this to see if it applies to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great resource. I just say that's easy to access. And you can just Google their
Autism Society of America, right, James?
Correct. And we have an Iowa chapter as well, but the large website for the national agency, I think, has the best resources for it.
Okay. And Judy, the final 30 seconds for you. Give us a vision of where you hope you've been worked in this area for a long time. How would you like workplace accommodations and our awareness as a society to be in the future?
You know, I would love for individuals with autism to be able to state what they hope to do in the future, what kind of help they need, and for systems to be in place to help that happen. And then for businesses simultaneously to creatively look at the opportunities. And I find that businesses actually have many more answers than we give them credit for.
Absolutely.
Because they accommodate workers all the time. And sometimes we're just afraid to ask.
Right. And to say, celebrate our neurodiversity.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. What a fascinating conversation. My mind has been open to this, and I think I speak for a number of listeners who must feel the same thing. James Williams, administrator for the Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services, Judy Worth of the University of Iowa Healthcare, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
Take care.
Today's program produced by Caitlin Troutman with help from Samantha McIntosh. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.